Welcome to the Church Podcast, talking all things ministry to help you do church better. I'm your co-host, Chris Wesley, and I'm joined by John Rinaldo. John, how are you doing?
I am excellent today, starting 2018 off with a bang, and so life is very good. How about you?
I'm doing well, too. Yeah, I mean, it's hard to believe we're a couple weeks in already to 2018, and just I think with as we get older, just time flies by quicker. You know, you think about the times where you maybe sat in class and it looked like the second hand was moving backwards instead of forwards. And maybe that was the case because your clock was just broken. But yeah.
You know, I one time heard someone say the analogy of life is like a roll of toilet paper. The closer you get to the end, the faster it goes. Have you thought about that before?
I've never really looked at toilet paper that way, but okay, there you go.
Now you look at it in a whole new world.
Right, right. So I'll remember that next time I go to the office. But anyway, let's keep this clean, John. Let's keep this clean.
Okay, okay. Sounds good.
So, you know, it's interesting because as people who've listened from the beginning know, we are not sitting in the same room. In fact, if anything, we are sitting thousands of miles apart. John's in Northern California. Is San Jose area considered Northern California?
Definitely. I'm always amazed is the wrong word. I'm always interested to know, you know, do people know where San Jose is? Third largest city in California. It's where Silicon Valley is, the homes of Facebook and Adobe and everybody else and Google. But we sometimes have a hard time knowing where it is. Now, on the flip side, you want me to name something exactly where it is geographically on the East Coast? Well, I may have a problem. So I guess I can handle that and understand where people know where San Jose is or don't know where it is.
Right. So that's where John's from, is San Jose. And where I'm from is, well, not originally, but where I live right now is in Baltimore, Maryland. And it's funny, you're like, San Jose, the home of Google, Apple, and all these esteemed tech companies. And I'm like, oh, Baltimore, the home of The Wire, Homicide, and The Corner, you know, and
CRS.
And CRS, there you go, CRS. So all these, CRS is a little bit more esteemed. But anyway, yes. No, I could have thrown in some like other thing. Things like the Premier C and whatever. But you match up Google to The Wire. I think more people like The Wire than Google. But anyway, I don't know. That's open to debate. But the reason I brought that up is because we are using technology to communicate to one another. We use a program called Zoom. If Zoom is listening and wants to pay us for that, please send it to both of us. And, you know, we're just using just different technology, and it enables us to do this podcast. And the reason that's important is because the way that we're communicating to one another, not just in our daily lives, but in ministry, is impacted by technology, whether we like it or not. I, as a lot of people know too, I came from Church of the Nativity. I worked there for over 12 years, and it's a church that has fully embraced technology in so many different ways. And now I'm at a more traditional church, St. Joseph's in Cockeysville. It's a great church, and technology is definitely used, but it's used differently and in definitely different ways than what we're used at Nativity. And we could talk about, when we say technology, John, right, that covers a whole gamut of areas. But what I want to talk about today specifically is how we use it as a communication tool in our social media, email marketing, even website. So we're going to keep out of the church stuff, which would be fun to talk about, maybe a little bit more controversial. But let's talk a little bit more about communication. So at the parishes that you've worked at, talk about some of the ways that you guys used electronic media to communicate to your congregation.
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting. Technology has evolved over the years. It is something that I think the church, not wrongly so, but the church has been slow to embrace right away as we try to understand how it works and how do we use it in an effective way, yet at the same time, how do we use it and keep people safe and reduce liability? That was a big conversation in the youth ministry world, especially, you know, because if social media is where all the young people are at in this day and age of the 21st century, then if we want to protect God's children, then how do we use this stuff in a way that's going to be safe and effective? And I think those are the questions that we need to answer and moving forward. And I mean, here in my experience, people use it in a myriad of ways. You know, by now, pretty much every church has a website. That seems pretty basic, but the question is, do we utilize it to the full capacity? Maybe, maybe not. But I think people now have finally come to the understanding that we need a church website. And I think this is really important because you have all these other tools available to your disposal. But I think the website needs to be and should be the core of your technology in your terms of communications, in terms of email marketing, in terms of social media, because the reality is the website, out of everything you do out there with social media, Twitter, Facebook, Snapchat, whatever, the website is the only technology tool that you control 100% right. In terms of content, in terms of how people see your content and how people get to your content. Now we'll get to this in a little bit more, but when you talk about all the other social media platforms, for instance, you don't control those platforms at all because Facebook can change their format, their algorithms, everything about themselves can change tomorrow. And you would have no say in that. Facebook is not like saying, hey, so Chris, what do you think about this change that we're going to do? No, they're not doing that. You know, so that's why we have to be really careful about spending all of our time and energy on things like social media because we don't control it and it could change tomorrow. And constantly, even myself, I've constantly had to reinvent how I use social media based on how Twitter and Facebook and Snapchat and MySpace, how they all use and how they all work. And that's actually been frustrating for me because I'm sitting there going, oh, can you not change for once? And this is coming from a person who doesn't mind change. I like change. I embrace change. But at some point, I'm like, I just got into a routine of how I use it. So all that to say, I think I think your website needs to be the hub of everything you do. And everything else connects to your website.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, and I definitely want to dive more into the website, but just to touch upon social media a little bit further, you mentioned MySpace, which is no longer.
I believe it still exists, but more focused on like music, the music world. I haven't been on it forever, so I have no idea.
Let's face it, in regards to relevancy, it's no longer. But,
okay, fair enough.
You look at some of these platforms and you mention how they change. And, you know, I remember when Periscope came out and there was a couple of other sort of platforms similar to that where I used it. And then Facebook Live came out and that trumped Periscope. And, you know, people were using Facebook forever. And then they thought that that was kind of getting irrelevant and it's changed. And they've bought Instagram and you still have Twitter out there and, you know, Snapchat and just different things. And it can be overwhelming and it can be exhausting. So I think if anyone's looking to improve the way that they do information communication or electronic media communication, the website is definitely the first place to start because that's like the foundation. And you know, I was listening to you talk. I'm like, this sounds like a man who just recently launched his own website, because there is so much that goes into it. I think, before we kind of get into best practices, I think the number one golden rule that comes with technology, and I get this from Jim Collins's book, Good to Great, is that technology is an accelerator. You know, it can accelerate you towards greatness and it can accelerate you towards failure. So it's a powerful tool. And it's not to say that you shouldn't use it, but you really need to think about the why and the how you're going to use it before you jump into it. Now, you and I, we've probably gone through other church websites before just to look up, you know, contact information. And some of them just look like a bulletin that's been, stamped up there. And that's, you know, it's something, but it also communicates a lot about what your church, you know, offers. And it might be a false communication or it might be a true communication, but like what you put on your website gives the first impression. So I think like rule number one or best practice is know that what you're putting up there is going to give the first impression to people looking for your church, because most people now go church shopping by looking online. Mm-hmm. And so what your church website portrays is what is going to create that expectation of for them before they walk into that church building. So let's talk about some of those things that need to be on that website that give a good first impression. John, in your experience, what have you seen?
Yeah, I mean, I think first and foremost, it's really about a clean look. Now, I am not an expert on this at all. So that's my caveat. All the websites that I've done or worked on, somebody else designed, and I focused more on content. And I think that's good for all of us to know. Like, no one's expecting you to be a webmaster or me to be a webmaster. So get people on board around you who do this. Now, in this day and age, there are a lot of people that can pop up a website very quickly and might even volunteer to help you do it at a cheap or free basis. But it's clean look. It's got to be a clean look. It can't be cluttered. It can't be crazy. There's nothing that turns me off more than a website that just has no space. What do I mean by that? Every website needs to have some sort of white space where there's nothing. There's no content, but it adds to the feeling because it just doesn't feel like I'm being inundated. And so the clean look is and white space is important. I would say a second piece of that is really what's your color scheme and logos. Now that may be getting too detailed and I don't want to go too far into that because again, that's going to get too techie, but invest in getting someone to help you create some sort of logo, some sort of brand. It's about branding, right? You know, and so whatever that logo is for your parish graphically, use that across all your platforms, you know, for consistency. But it obviously starts with the website. And so I think first and foremost, clean look with a good logo that you can use across platforms. And I see the second thing is to ask yourself, why do people come to your website?
Right.
Because that's what you put up front. That's what you put on the first page, the home page. And let's be honest, the number one reason people come to your website is to know when your mass times are.
Right.
So don't make people click around your website to find mass times. Put it right there on the home page, right above the fold, so that people see it the moment they type in that URL or search your church.
Yeah, no, I would agree. I don't know if I would agree exactly with the placement of the times and whatnot, but I definitely agree that that is the number one reason why people are looking for your website. They want to know location, denomination, and times, because those are the three major factors. They want to know especially if they're, you know, Roman Catholic or affiliated with a specific denomination, they want to know that's what you are. And not all church names communicate that. They want to know where you are. Are you, and usually they'll get to that when they're Googling it, you know, and it'll just pop up and give them directions. But then, it's mass times. Like, how accessible is that information? The other key important part, and I learned this from Donald Miller, who's an author, and he's also a brand expert. And I've heard this in other places too before. But John, I'm going to ask you, do you know what the most important part or the most important real estate on your website is?
The about page.
Well, it could be the about page, but actually it's the upper left-hand corner of your webpage.
Oh, okay.
The most important real estate, because that's where people's eyes tend to wander. And so that's where your call to action needs to be. So, you know, when people go to the website, like, you want to give them that hook, that information. And I agree, visually, it needs to be appealing. And it needs to definitely give them the information, or at least clear action of what that information is. But if you want them to do something on that website, whether it's, you know, learn about us or join the parish or, you know, sign up for an event, the upper left-hand corner of your website's page is where most people are going to go. And if you don't believe me, just, you know, check out any of the websites that you have, like, you know, even your Gmail, you know, like your My Account and everything, that's to the upper left, you know. And so I would say upper left-hand corner is your most important real estate. You know, be sure that you want them there. Another piece of advice with that landing page, and I agree with you, having margin and room and white space is so important. something another person shared with me that I thought was more important is you want to avoid the scroll. Like people, yes, they're more accustomed to scrolling up and down, but basically you want to, you don't want them to be searching throughout the whole website just for a little bit of important piece of information. So I'd say that is the important thing about the landing page. So I want to though jump to About Us because you talked about that.
Yeah.
All right. What are some good things you've seen about the About Us page, and what are some really like horrendous things that you've seen?
Well, I think firstly, when people do a search, they go to your homepage first. Obviously, that's often where they land first, and they get some basic information. Mm-hmm. It's from there, like mass times or whatnot, or location, denomination. But from there, if they're intrigued enough, the next page that people go to the most, and there are plenty of stats to back this up, is the About page. And that's not just true on a church website. That's true on a lot of different things. The About right. page is the place where, you know, you and I are able to articulate the vision, articulate the mission of what it is that we do, who we are as a community, what we are all about. And people want to know that. They want to know mass times, and they want to know, who are these people I'm going to go worship with, right? And so that's where the About page, I think, is really important. You know, and I think it's worth taking some time to put information on there to think through the copy of that page to say, what are we trying to message out into the world about who we are? What is our identity? And I think there are a lot of good ways of doing that. Obviously, you can use text. It's a perfect place right. to embed a video of some sort. So you have a marketing video about your parish or who you are, whatnot. Right. It's a great place for that because people are much more likely to watch a short 2-minute video than they are to read pages and pages of text. I mean, let's be real. I'm the same way. So I think the About page, I think, is important. And who's on staff and how do you get a hold of them? Mm. Now, in my line of work, that's what I tend to go to anyways. And I sometimes... If I can't find the mass times, that's super annoying. Then if I can't find the contact information of the staff, like who's the pastor or who's the faith formation director and what's their email or phone number, like I start ripping my hair out because I'm like, I just need this information. This is not difficult. You know, but that's a big part of your identity is your staff and the key people and how do you get a hold of them? Because if I want to know some more information about the Faith Formation Program or the Youth Ministry Program or how to give to your parish, I need to know who the best person is to contact there, and I want to be able to find that quickly. So articulate who you are, what your identity is, and certainly articulate who your staff is and how to contact them.
Yeah, I'm a little annoyed, John, though. If people can find me, they're going to contact me more, and I just don't want that as a youth minister. No, I'm just kidding. But you're right. I mean, I think so often we hide all the important stuff, and we want to communicate things that people don't initially care about. And it's not to say your events are unimportant or your programs or your ministry are unimportant, but there is kind of a hierarchy. I mean, going back to it, yeah, mass times, location, how to get in touch with someone if I have questions. You know, if it's families with kids that you're trying to attract, make sure that the kids and teen programs are really clear on what people need to know and how to get there. And it's interesting because I think we are going more away from text, and I think people should be empowered to use more video because people have the time for video, especially if it's a 1 to 2 minute video. And you should be able to communicate your vision and important information in that time, because if you can't, then people are going to shut you off. But using video is really important because we are more visual. Now, I think a lot of people who are listening to this are thinking like, that'd be great, Chris. That'd be great, John. But we just don't have anyone on staff or the money to do that. And I really believe it's one of those things where we think it's more expensive than it is. I think unless you have a specific web designer on staff, which we did at Nativity, but, you know, I've yet to really find a web designer on staff. Like, don't be afraid to outsource it.
Yeah.
And don't be afraid to even outsource someone to manage it as well. Because nowadays with communication, it's a lot easier to keep in touch with someone who might be hundreds to thousands of miles away who are going to manage your website. So I definitely say that don't be afraid to outsource. And also, there's so many great programs out there like Squarespace, where it's a lot of plug and play, where it's not a lot of work to do that. But try not to do that on your own. Try to outsource that to the experts so that they can update that stuff on a regular basis.
And yeah, I agree. And I think there's probably people in your parish that probably do some of this stuff, even if it's just as a hobby. I mean, you don't have to spend thousands and thousands of dollars to hire a professional, you know, like, although that would be nice, that certainly makes a difference. But I think there are plenty of people that know how to do website design that are probably in your community. I mean, I'm speaking from a urban suburban setting of the Bay Area in California. And so obviously we've got a lot of techies. So for us, a web designer, somebody who knows how to do a website, or a dime a dozen, that may be true in your neck of the woods because you are in an urban suburban setting, Chris.
Right.
Maybe more rural areas may not have that as much, but look to your parish, you know, ask there first if your budget's limited and see who's out there. So don't be afraid of that.
Yeah. And paying for a good web hosting company won't break the bank too. You know, It's a couple bucks a month, you know, and it really is affordable. What you would pay to outsource your website and to have someone manage it afar would be cheaper than hiring someone in-house. Yeah. Because obviously you're not paying for benefits and things along those lines.
Right.
So definitely don't be afraid to do that. Mm-hmm. Right, kind of moving gears from website, I think the next thing, let's focus a little bit on communication. And we talked about, you know, social media, but also I want to talk about best practices when we talk about email marketing. Now, I don't know about you, John, but I've always used services like Constant Contact or MailChimp something along those lines, where you can actually plug and play and try different, they're called skins, but themes for your different emails. I think email is sometimes, and we're talking about emailing to your congregation, not necessarily inter-office emails, even though that could probably be another topic. But I am often floored by the fact that people that I've worked with shoot out an email and get frustrated when they hear no response. And it's probably due to a few reasons, but I think the number one rule when it comes to email communication is you can't communicate enough. Would you agree with that, or do you think there's a rule that trumps that one?
The rule that trumps it is don't annoy people that are on your email list, because I think there is a threshold where they can only handle so many emails from you. But I agree. I think we need to message clearly, message often, but not to the point that we're like, oh my gosh, my parish is sending me another email, to the point that it becomes white noise and they don't even open it and they delete it. Now, I don't believe we have that problem most of the time. I believe we're on the other spectrum, but.
But I'm going to push back on that too, because I think it's all white noise right now. Because we get 200 emails a day, you know, and it's going to be white noise. That's why you have to email multiple times. And yeah, I mean, I get annoyed by the emails I get from Amazon or places that I shop and frequent, you know, the most. But maybe I'm just too lazy to unsubscribe from them, or, you know, it has become the white noise. But I think to overcome emailing them too much, which I agree, we don't have that problem, is it comes down to copywriting, right? It comes down to how good is your subject line, which would be like the headline of, if you're writing a news article, the headline of your news article is your subject line. And then are you able to communicate quickly what you want them to know and what you want them to do in that email, whether it's a newsletter or an announcement or something along those lines.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I agree with that. And it needs to be often enough where people are going to be reminded of what it is that you want. So if there's a specific campaign that you're doing, then of course there's a call to action that you want. You say you want to do year-end giving, for instance.
Right.
Well, yeah, you're going to ramp that up and you're going to have a certain amount of emails kind of going out through November into December, kind of reminding people of that. And so I think part of that is just intentionality, you know, being intentional about what it is you communicate, what is the call to action that you want in that. And so again, it's different strategies. If there's not a call to action, if it's merely an informational type of thing, well, then that's something that you're not going to send out as often necessarily. And so those are timing things that I think we could play around with. Now, Chris, let me ask you this. What is the best day of the week and time of the day to send an email out to somebody that is more likely to be opened?
Oh, man. I've always found more success on Tuesday mornings.
Okay.
You know, Tuesday mornings, I don't know. Is that, do you know the answer? Are you like,
this is a few years old. I went to a Constant Contact workshop actually when we were using Constant Contact, which by the way is a great platform to use if you want to do email marketing. They said Tuesday afternoon. Yeah. And the reason they were talking about is when people get into their routine in the morning, right? They've got a ton of emails or whatnot. And so sometimes when they're getting started, their mind is all over the place. They're going through all their emails. They're thinking about their tasks for the day. And your email is less likely to be opened and read because of that. Now, Tuesday afternoon, I used to send it out Tuesdays at like 2 p.m. or 2:30 p.m. because right about 2:30, you get into that after lunch lull where you've had lunch, you kind of come back at 1 o'clock or whatever, and you're kind of doing your thing and you kind of remotivated. And then you start to lose that energy in the afternoon, right? And we start looking for distractions. Oh, look, here's an email from my parish. Let me read it. This was just at a workshop that I went to, Constant Contact, but I found that to be very interesting. And I never got a chance to really do a lot of testing on that. But since I heard that, I'm like, okay, the guys at Constant Contact know what they're talking about. So I'm going to send it out Tuesday afternoon.
Well, you know, some people might be like, well, Chris and John, like you're talking about MailChimp, Constant Contact, those are paid services. Why not use Gmail? And yeah, I use Gmail for a lot of things, but what I like about those services is you can track reports. So you can know when people are opening them and you can adjust that. Because, you know, it's interesting, you mentioned the Tuesday thing, and I knew it was Tuesday because when I used to work at Sam Goody, for those of you who are under 25, might not know, Sam Goody was a record CD store.
East Coast only? Because I don't know Sam Goody at all.
Oh, man, you don't know Sam Goody?
No.
What was their, they had, it was a whole different conglomerate. Suncoast Video, have you heard of them?
Nope, sorry.
All right.
Anyways, so continue.
25 and from the West Coast. No, but I mean, you know what a CD store is. That's my point. So,
yes, I do. Yeah.
I should have like made something up and said, when I worked at Tower Records.
Yeah, see, I would have known Tower.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. So anyway, when I worked at Sam Goody, all of the release dates for movie rentals and or for movies that you could buy or CDs or whatnot was always a Tuesday.
Wow, and I didn't know that.
Webinars and everything like that, they say best day is usually Tuesday, and I'm sure it's for those similar reasons. But yeah, I would say like definitely avoid Friday afternoons or Fridays altogether because most people don't check things. Monday is fine, but you're going to get lost in that noise because then everything else is going to come. But test that out. Tuesdays, let us know the results that you guys get. But I think that's important. Definitely to look at when you send them as well. And then when you open up the email, I think it's important really too to be clear. You want them to be scannable because most people are reading email on their phone these days. You want them to get to the point and you want there to be a specific call to action. So if people are not like responding to your messages, look at the link, look at the scannability, look at how they're being written. And really it's almost kind of like taking the elevator speech and trying to put that in every single email. And don't be afraid to resend that same message, just repackage it in a different way. Because if people don't catch it Tuesday afternoon, they might catch it Wednesday morning or Thursday. And you just want to make sure that they get that. And if you don't believe me, I mean, look at all these companies out there. They're trying to sell you stuff. I mean, it's successful because they've looked at the algorithms and they've measured it out. Mm-hmm. So definitely check those out.
Yeah, and I think the important piece to kind of back up a little bit with this too is I'm not sure we're that good as church of actually collecting people's email addresses, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I know at where I was at before, we spent a lot of time trying to get email addresses. We often had addresses and we had names and we had the names of every child and every grandchild. We had all that information, which is good in our database. We need to be intentional about capturing email addresses this day and age. Right. And we need to have that in the database, because if we don't have people's email addresses, then any email marketing campaign that we do as a church sending out information about big events or whatnot is going to be useless. And so I think that's really important. So collect emails. And I think the other piece is, do not have an endlessly long email. What I used to do I use Constant Contact for my service. And again, this is not talking about individual emails from you to a staff member or you to a single parishioner. This is kind of like group email marketing that we're talking about. I would limit it to about 4 article blocks. You know, I'd have no more than 4 pieces, and maybe there'd be some sort of introductory thing and then 3 pieces of content. But here's the key. That piece of content can't be that long. I try to keep it short and make it a teaser. And this is why the website is important, that you do something along the lines, for more information, they, you know, click here, you know, that link takes you to the website that has all the details. It has the registration. It has whatever it is that's going on there.
Right.
So that's where the copy that you create for that article block is key. Short and sweet and succinct, to get people to click on the website. That's often the goal. The call to action in many cases is get more information by going to our website. And that's why the website really is the hub of everything that you do. That's going to be true if you're posting something on a Facebook page or on Twitter or wherever else. Is you only have 280 characters now on Twitter. Woohoo! You know, you can only get so much across. So click to the website, because you're going to get more detail. On Facebook, click to the website so you can get more details about that. And so that's why I consider the website as a hub. You know, Chris, when I do workshops on social media and technology along those lines, I actually have this visual where I have basically this website in a circle. The circle's in the middle, and that's the website. And then I have all these spokes going out of the middle of that website. And the spokes are basically Twitter and email and podcast and YouTube and Facebook and Snap and whatever, all these types of things, and being intentional about that. But again, the hub is your website, and that's why it's important to put that first.
All right. So I know we've covered a lot of stuff today in just talking about 2 areas, email and website, but hopefully people have seen how they've linked. And again, number one thing is, don't be afraid to outsource. Don't be afraid to pay a little extra to do this, because the time, energy, and margin that will save you is incredible and worth it. If you guys have more questions about this, feel free to reach out to us at questions@thechurchpodcast.org. And speaking of social media, John, people can reach you at John Rinaldo on Twitter, and also at your website, johnrinaldo.com. If you want to get, yeah.
And no, sorry. Go ahead. I was just going to say. No. Also, we've never plugged each other's Facebook page either. So I don't know if you're on Facebook. You know, my handle is at John M. Rinaldo on Facebook. So check that out. We got a Facebook page, and I think you've got stuff on Facebook too, right?
I do. You know, and my Facebook page is Marathon Youth Ministry. So facebook.com/Marathon Youth Ministry, and I'm on the Twitter at Chris R. Wesley. And you can check out my website, marathonyouthministry.com. And just, feel free to look at those sites and say, you guys are hypocrites. Your websites don't say anything.
Probably.
Definitely check those out. And feel free to reach out to us, especially if you have questions for this podcast. And always help us get the word out there by leaving a review on iTunes. When you guys leave reviews, it allows other people to hear what we're saying, and not just clicking on the stars, but actually leaving comments. It also gives us feedback on what we could do better and how we can improve. And because we want to communicate to you better, because again, this is all about talking all things ministry so that you guys can do church better.
Hey, Chris, can we make a commitment right now?
Yeah.
We only talked about website. We only talked about email today. Can we, in the next episode, almost like as a part 2, really spend some time on social media? Does that sound fair to you?
I think that sounds fantastic. Let's do that. We'll keep it to, you know, the popular ones like Friendster and MySpace.
and Friendster forever.
And AIM. Oh, wait, that just shut down.
Dude, why do you got to rub it in? Some of us really miss AIM.
Did you have an account to the end?
No, I did not.
Okay, all right.
But I used it in college. That was about it.
Yeah. But anyway, so throw away those AOL discs that give you 20 hours to see that.
Oh, I forgot about those. Oh, my goodness.
Thank you all for listening to us. Again, this is the Church Podcast, talking all things ministry so you can do church better. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll see you guys next time.
Take care.